Back here on Downtown on a Thursday afternoon. Rich Kimble with you. Carrie Haskell joining us from the New Orleans studios. And joining us on the telephone line from Defector, the co-host of the Distraction podcast. And well, I can make it public now. He was going to be my nominee for our Secretary of Cultural Awareness, David Roth. Hello, David.
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Just oh, fantastic. What could be wrong?
Yeah, nothing. I guess I'm just thinking about how I missed out on that secretary gig. That would have been great.
Well, I there was nobody better qualified for it. But look, I didn't get the votes. The people have spoken. And so, yeah, I'm here doing radio, which is a pretty good backup plan.
Yeah, that's cool. And I'm sure that Scott Baio will do a really good job.
Yeah.
In that position.
I think so. He's uniquely qualified because otherwise out of work or out on the fringe so far that nobody can find him. And that seems to be the coin of the realm.
Yeah, that's how we're doing it. We don't need to talk about this stuff. We can talk about other stuff if you want. How are you holding up okay? Is everything good?
Yes, yeah. Well, I was telling Carrie when we went into the commercial break that, you know, we would ease into this stuff with you. And he likened it to, you know, jumping into the water when it's cold. You got to put your tiptoes in and ease your way into it.
Yeah, this is not the sort of thing. It's not healthy to do it any other way.
No. So I want to talk about the social media world first, because I noticed that you're out there on Blue Sky. And I was telling Carrie earlier, you know, I've tried a bunch of these other places and you never know. But more of what I like to think of as our people, like you, have made their way to Blue Sky. I've at least got some hope that it will be okay.
Yeah, I think it's getting better. Of the ones that I've tried, I mean, I remember when Elon bought Twitter, and then instantly things sort of stopped working, and he was firing a bunch of people, and, you know, like, it seemed like it was going to tip over at any time, which it hasn't. I mean, it's gotten infinitely worse, but only incrementally less functional. I'd signed up for a bunch of other different platforms and sort of tried them out. And, you know, it's hard. The fun of it is interacting with people, like, in terms of just coming up with a really good pun and then just dropping it out there is like, that's basically vandalism. You know, like, it's not like I could write that on a bus and have the same effect if there's not somebody there to be like, hey, man, nice pun. So Blue Sky, initially, there was enough people there, you know, just people that I was friendly with that were trying it out as sort of a, you know, a Twitter replacement or like a step down, you know, like the way that you might use methadone if you were trying to kick an addiction to opiates. And in this case, it's, you know, it got better. It started off really perverse and lousy, like just kind of the way that internet spaces sometimes can, you know, like someone comes in and they're like, as of now, I'm in charge of Blue Sky. And then like 15 minutes later, they're like, he has been banned from the site for sending his penis to every person. The site. And, you know, now there's more normal people. One thing that's been great about this week, there's been, you know, floods of millions of people have signed up in the last few days. And a lot of them are the beat writers for teams that, you know, like, I followed a ton of people on Twitter, and a lot of it was just like, you know, it doesn't cost anything. I like new information and distracting myself from the work I'm supposed to be doing. And so in this, there was something really gratifying to me about seeing like the Minnesota Timberwolves beat guy that I think is really good join Blue Sky. And that was great. Like, there's been a lot of that. And I think once you can have some of the same experience that you had on Twitter in terms of watching the same sporting event as everyone else and then making the same jokes about it as everyone else, at that point, you know, we're rolling. I think that there's really not much need for Twitter once you've got that stuff going.
No, you're right. Absolutely. Speaking of sports, again, they came up a little short, but wow, what a year for your Mets.
Yeah, I guess we haven't talked since then. I have not felt this good at the end of a Mets season basically in my life. I have no idea how sustainable it is. You know, there obviously are some prominent players that are free agents, and I don't know what the team's plan is in terms of bringing them back. But being surprised in a positive way by your team is, you know, it's the best feeling there is as a fan. I think a lot of people that are fans, if you talk to, you know, people that are fans of really good teams, like all the Warriors fans that I know, like a lot of them, like the team that they remember best, and this is, you know, whatever, four championships in the last decade and change, the team that they remember is the Baron Davis team that beat Andrei Kirilenko in the first round. You know, it's the We Believe team. I think that anything that sort of opens onto the possibility of a brighter future, like once you get good, it's stressed. You know, it can be stressful. You start expecting the team to be good all the time. I mean, I thought this Mets team was going to win 83 games this year going into the season, and then they were the worst team, or you know, one of the worst teams in the sport for a couple months. And I was thinking about watching something else, and then they just played their butts off the whole rest of the way. And they weren't as good as the Dodgers. Nobody was as good as the Dodgers. But I got a lot more enjoyment out of this baseball season than I have at any time in recent memory.
Now, right there in the same zip code, Aaron Rodgers. Gosh, I'm so disappointed to see the way this has gone down for a quality human being like him.
Yeah, it's tough to see the, because a lot of the people, they've been trying to cancel him for his beliefs and his values and for all the interceptions that he throws and because of the fact that he can't move at all anymore. And I can't stand that. It's un-American. It is really gratifying to, and the thing that's like weird about it, I wrote about this a little while back, is like it's hard to separate. Like there's quarterbacks that are bad, right? Like Daniel Jones is the guy that I watch most.
Oof. Oof.
That's not good.
No.
It's a bad choice, Rich. I shouldn't be doing it. But at the same time, like I know that he's the best Daniel Jones that he can be. And like his vibe is mostly that of like, it's like if someone woke you up and then you were suddenly running with the Bulls in Pamplona. That's what it's like to watch him try to play in an NFL game. Aaron Rodgers just seems, some of it is that he's older and he's not very mobile. And I think the arm strength is like finally starting to go a little bit. But the main issue there, it seems like, is that he just hates playing football now.
Yeah.
And he is like radiating misery, like the way that Pigpen always has like dust flying off of him in the peanuts. Like it's just, there's a vibe about him that like, you know, even if he was still capable of making the throws, I feel like the team would have the same record. Like he just really seems to have curdled, which again, you know, sort of maybe I'm reading too much into this happening after we suddenly found out what kind of guy he actually is after years of being kind of the funny NFL quarterback, but it really feels over there. I'm sure the Jets are going to bring him back anyway, but I can't imagine what's left.
Well, a cabinet position would seem to be a real possibility.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if there was some sort of like, if he could get Recess appointed to host Jeopardy, it's weird how that's the sliding doors moment for him that I think really like I keep coming back to, because he was very close to getting that job. And I think that, you know, it's not like game show hosts are crazy people, you know, that like the more you know about like what Chuck Woolery or Pat Sajak believes, the less you will want to know about it. Like these are they're demented. Like in the way that like only people that have like a lot of money and live in California and have never had a real job can be demented. But I think that Rodgers like probably could have done a good job, you know, like but he would have probably had to keep this under wraps. And, you know, everybody, he would be sort of a beloved American figure. I mean, I don't know what, like, Alex Trebek thought about the germ theory of disease. And I think part of not knowing that is why I think so fondly of Alex Trebek.
We're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. What are we calling it? It's not the in-season tournament. It's the Cup. Was it the Emirates Cup or something like that for the NBA? Yes.
Yeah. I'm being stubborn and I'm not saying the Emirates part. I feel like that's kind of bad vibes. I don't need to think about that while it's happening, but I am kind of into it. Are you like, have you taken the NBA Cup pill? Are you ready to like let this happen?
I enjoyed it last year, and I guess I took it as a sign that, you know, I'm immature for my advanced years because I enjoyed the crazy courts.
Yeah. I mean, the issues that I had with the crazy courts were basically, it was happening right around the time that we had gotten the new TV.
Oh.
And I think that you have to like do all these settings so that it doesn't look like you're watching a telenovela. Like you have to like turn this off, turn that off on every new television. Because otherwise it's going to motion smooth it and color correct it and whatever. And watching a new TV where I was still figuring out the settings try to figure out how to show me Luke Kornet on an entirely green Celtics court was like, I thought the thing was going to blow up. Like, it was just not equipped for that visual experience. This year, the courts seem a little more understated, which I like pretty well. And I like that the games have been really good. I think the players seem interested and engaged, and they do seem to be treating it like it's something meaningful from one game to the next. And so, I mean, I think the most basic thing you could hope for from it is just if they have to play games before Thanksgiving, which I don't think they do, but the league is not going to give that back. If you're going to do it, like, finding a way to increase the stakes of those games is obviously the smart move. I just can't believe how easily they seem to have done it, because it really does seem to be working.
Yeah, well, I agree completely here. Hey, you wrote a terrific piece. Came out on Sunday on Defector called Beyond Belief, looking at this world that we're in here that did not begin with the recent election. It's been going on for a while. And I thought it was really very interesting and insightful when you talked about really the destruction of our sense of community and how that's developed over the last several years.
Yeah, thanks. It's tough. I mean, because I think that's one of those things where you don't want to say that everything that is wrong with the country at this moment, you know, like politically, culturally, whatever, that all of it is COVID. Because it's, you know, obviously Donald Trump was president when COVID happened. Like, something was clearly not cooking right before that happened. But I feel like that's the bit that I've sort of kept coming back to, not just in terms of, you know, the polling after the election in terms of why people made their decisions and stuff. I think that there is just a sense of distance and a sense of sort of a fractalized reality that people have that is really hard to figure out how to negotiate or deal with. And the more you think about it, the more sort of worrying it gets. I mean, I think that in this case, the idea that there's not really a shared reality outside of, you know, the Super Bowl in American culture is pretty dark, and I don't know how to navigate it. I mean, I think the fact that people spend less time with each other and more time online, the fact that there's, you know, also this kind of incredibly worrying decline in literacy in general in the country, like, oh, some striking percentage of adults really just can't read even at a sixth grade level, like astonishingly high. And I mean, maybe these were always problems, but at some point you start thinking about, like, well, how are we going to fix ourselves and get ourselves back on the same page with, you know, actual existing reality? And, you know, but you worry about, or I worry about, the sort of, like, closing of all of these, you know, avenues of recourse there. And I think the thing that, you know, that works, the thing that, like, helps people sort of remember themselves and, you know, remember that they are a part of a, you know, broader human race and not just posting into the void. It, for me, it has been the experiences that I've had, like, not just, you know, with friends and family and all of that stuff, but it's been organizing my workplace, you know, like that was like just being on the, you know, the same team as other people and working towards a goal. Like, it really does a lot to remind you what you're doing, who you are, you know, and where your sort of position is in the hierarchy of things. And I think that the, you know, online and especially, you know, sort of social media and algorithmically driven social media, both gasses people up and makes them feel small. And both of those are pretty deranging. And I think, you know, you kind of see that all around you.
Well, you know, and I found myself doing a little soul searching after the election and thinking about it, because I didn't think it was going to go this way. And it was dispiriting, certainly. But I realized, to an extent, you know, for years I've been saying, well, those people, are in a bubble. They're only hearing the information they want to hear. And then I looked in the mirror and said, well, I guess I am too, because everybody I deal with, certainly in social media, but the vast majority of people that I interact with in my personal life see the world the way I do. And I have said for the longest time, there are more of them or more of us than there are of them. I may have been wrong.
It's tough. I had a similar thought, and I don't think that there are more of them necessarily than there are of us. But I also feel like the idea of, I mean, the distinction here is basically between people that want to know what is actually happening, and then people, like, in terms of people that don't like being lied to, people that want to actually know the truth about stuff. Like, obviously, every time I hear myself saying these phrases, and it sounds like the sort of thing that Robert F. Kennedy says about vaccines, you know, like, it is like there's that language of hidden truth and conspiracies designed to conceal it from you. When I was going over the bit that I wrote on Sunday, it was the same. I saw myself using some of those phrases about, you know, what they want and what they don't want. But I think at this point, like, you can see much more readily what reactionary political forces are doing to make it difficult to know things. Like, you have to do more conspiracizing and more fantasy stuff to have it be like, no, it's George Soros and he's changing the election. Whereas if you look at what, like, Elon changed the algorithm, it started showing people different tweets. That's real. Like, Ron DeSantis trying to make it impossible to get a liberal arts education in the state of Florida. Real. Documented. Like, it's happening. And it's not the sort of thing that they're even doing behind the scenes. It's just, what's hard about it is, you know, you find yourself, and I feel it now as I'm talking to you, you talk about it in even as, like, you know, in as objective a way as you can, and you still worry about sounding like Donald Sutherland and JFK. You know? Like, it's just, it's hard to talk about this stuff without feeling like you are contributing to the broader derangement of it. And, well, yet, like, you know,
but I have,
knowing true things is a good thing.
It's, well, and so,
like, something you should try to do.
Is it that hard? I mean, I've never found it to be that difficult to find the truth out there, or something pretty close to the truth, by sticking with, you know, what we would call the legacy media. Are they right all the time? Of course not. They never have been, but they also don't venture too far into fantasy land.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's basically it. And there's all kinds of, you know, studies and stuff that show that people have less and less faith in legacy media. And I understand that to a certain extent. I mean, if you read the Times or the Washington Post or, you know, the Boston Globe or whatever, like, they're wrong about a lot of stuff. And a lot of times, you know, it's certainly the existence of, like, an opinion section at any of those newspapers does not do anything to make them more convincing or easy to advocate for. But there's also, I don't know, something to the idea of, like, starting with a shared reality and facts that can be agreed upon, and then figuring out how you feel about it and how that coverage is being angled. I can't imagine doing it any other way.
No, no. We heard a lot, too, about what the Trump people called the low propensity voters, and getting those people activated into the polls. And I don't know how much there was to that, but, you know, there's clearly a percentage of the population, I don't think I'm wrong about this, that view what's going on out there as just the Trump reality show, and love all of the twists and turns of the ride with seemingly no concept or no care as to what it actually means for real people.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's one of those things where it's hard to, I mean, it's not hard to argue against, in the sense that, like, it has a real human cost. The part of it that's crazy to me is that, like, this guy was president 4 years ago. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're not guessing at it anymore. Mm. Like, everybody, you should be able to remember what happened. And this is where, again, I think that COVID just blows a hole in everybody's understanding of the world and how it works and where you fit into it. That, like, I don't really remember the difference between what I was doing in 2020, 2021, and 2022. Like, I know there were different things that happened in there. I had three birthdays. And yet, like, it's all kind of just a mush at this point. And so the idea of, you know, accepting this as sort of fundamentally, accepting politics as a thing that just kind of happens to you, you know, and that it's either going to be entertaining or not entertaining, but it's fundamentally not different than any of the other content you consume. Like, that's both insane and wrong. And then also kind of a reflection of how poorly our systems are working, and we're working even before Trump, because I think that that is basically how a lot of people experience this. And, you know, it raises the stakes for people that want to have a functioning state and enjoy the benefits of living in a country that works, you know, that, like, if it's not working, it's not just the question of people losing faith and like deciding to stay home. It's the question of like, if it becomes a television show like anything else, then it's really hard to sort of communicate through that noise what actually is meaningful about it. And I don't know. I mean, certainly Joe Biden wasn't up to it. And I felt like the Harris campaign had its moments and then kind of stopped trying. But there's clearly something that people understand deeply is both wrong and not working right now. And speaking to it, you know, it's not something that Trump has got in him. I don't know who's going to take the place of it, but like, you can't just live in abstraction forever. The world doesn't work that way.
And with all of these nominees that just have gone from the sublime to the ridiculous, and I've heard people say, well, man, maybe Trump is nominating some of these more extreme choices to float them out there. And then when they get rejected, he'll be able to slide in the people he wants. And I think you're making it way too complicated. It's always Occam's razor with Trump. Just take the easiest, most obvious thing. He wants these people because they all have worshipped him on television.
Yeah, exactly. There are people that he knows from TV. And I think that that's like what they would register as to his followers, too. The idea that we're still, again, after he was president, after 4 years of watching his brain trickle out his ears on stage at various different events across this great land, the idea that anybody is convinced that he's playing six-dimensional chess is amazing to me. There's a tweet that I've seen people boosting. It's an older one. It's from 2022 by Will Sennett that I will read to you now that I think is really, like, this is, again, like, beyond the Occam's razor version of it. All right, so, parentheses, cognitive behavioral therapy enjoyer that I just cut off in traffic. Think positively. He's probably in a rush for a reason. Maybe he's late for a job interview. Maybe his wife is giving birth. And then me, I'm the king of the highway. That is what... So assume that Trump is in king of the highway mode at all times, and you're going to be right so much more often than you're wrong.
Carrie, did you want to jump in?
Well, I just, it's, you had talked a little bit about the media and then with the announcements, and I'm seeing the media coverage of it as sort of, oh, he nominated this person, but the media doesn't seem to have any sense of urgency. They seem so occupied with the both sides need to be treated equally that when stuff that is obviously harmful to the country doesn't get reported as being harmful to the country. I mean, you know, it is ludicrous that RFK is going to be the director of Health and Human Services. I mean, the guy is an anti-vaxxer. The long list of the damage that he is going to do. And I don't see the ABC Newses, the you know, CBS, the New York Times, though they're a lost cause at this point, it feels like, the Washington Times, really doing reporting on this is dangerous and it needs to be stopped. Isn't there, at some point, it feels like it's a true failure of the media and journalism in general. And I say that as somebody who made his career in broadcasting. I mean, I've been doing it for a while.
Correct. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I don't think that there's any, I mean, the part of it that's tough, and again, this is like, this language has been kind of like made neutral because it's been coming from the right for so long, the idea of like the media and how it frames things and you need to look deeper and whatever. And I think that like the actual challenge for this, for people that still read, and I think you're exactly right in how this stuff is covered. And so much of the way that these places will cover something like, I mean, the important thing to know about Robert F. Kennedy as a potential Health and Human Services director is basically what you said, that he is opposed to vaccines, like on principle, that he believes a bunch of stuff that just is not so about like how disease works, about how medicine works, and that instead of actually being able to lay that out, there's this this overwhelming politeness of language in terms of, like, he's a vaccine skeptic or something like that, which is the sort of thing where it's like, well, I'm a skeptic of a bunch of things. Like, I didn't think the Mets were going to be good until, like, maybe late August. But it's not the same thing. Like, it's that the language of it imposing that sort of, like, dry sort of clinical language on top of these things that have these incredibly high human stakes is, I think, a disservice. And I think also there's this, the other bit about the coverage that I've found sort of deranging is that, like, and this is true, I mean, I think this is, like, part of what got us to where we are now, you know, with, like, a second Trump term, with the ubiquity of Trumpist politics, I think probably for decades to come, like, this way of doing it, that there's, I'm trying to figure out a way to say this that isn't too despairing, that more or less, if you're just covering it as a thing that is happening and not as a thing with stakes, like if you're just covering the events themselves, the nomination of this person, and then is he going to get confirmed or is he not going to get confirmed? If that's how you treat each one of the like absolute Dick Tracy villain squad of guys that he's nominating for this stuff, then I mean, you're doing a job, but you're not doing the job. You're telling people like the score of the game, but not remotely what the actual stakes are.
Well, and that's that's my quarrel with it, too. Much like the election coverage was all about the horse race aspects. Well, what do the polls say? Who's ahead? Can they come back? And the coverage of these nominations hasn't been, wow, Tulsi Gabbard is probably a Russian and Syrian asset. That would be really dangerous to our national security. Or Pete Hegseth is grossly unqualified to head up the largest bureaucracy on the planet, but instead the coverage has centered on, can they get confirmed? Will they be confirmed? Will they go to recess appointments instead? It's all about the horse race even now.
Yeah, and I think that shows where their attention is at, like what they think of this as. I mean, because I think that the thing that made the first Trump term, I think this is a misunderstanding that a lot of these places have, and I think you're now where sort of the bill is coming due on it, that a lot of these places did very well in terms of ratings and subscriptions in the Trump years. And I think that for them, if you were to look at the way that the coverage of it has shaken out, they think that it was that there was a lot of news happening.
Yeah.
There was just, and that they were first on it. Like, not necessarily that the stories about criminality or about just like the unbelievable venality of all these people that cycled through that administration. For them, it's like, I think that they believe that the act of reporting it, of simply sort of saying what was happening as it was happening, was the actual secret of its success. And I think that the actual fact of it was that people were, that normal people were disgusted and afraid of this stuff. And wanted to know more about it, wanted to understand why is this happening? How did this happen? Is there a way to make it stop happening? And I think that that, you know, maybe it's not the role of a newspaper to tell everybody, like, how to feel or how to think about stuff. But I think that elevating incident over substance gets you to where we are now.
All right,
like the one thing you can say for Trump, he has the same metabolism as an influencer. There's always something happening. Yeah. There's always going to be a story because he never goes to bed and he lives by the news cycle and he, you know, lives to be talked about. It's just, you know, there's the world is turning while all of that is happening. And it can get weird to be sort of subjected to this onslaught of incident without ever being told what it means or why it's happening.
All right. We always like to end on a positive note with you. So in the midst of all this, where do you turn? Obviously, family and friends, and you mentioned work, but let's look at the world of art, entertainment, movies, music, books. Where do you go to find release and escape and a place to go to forget about all this for a little while?
Well, I mean, I've been watching a lot of movies and stuff. I always watch a lot of movies, and we've already been over the NBA in-season tournament. The thing that we haven't quite gotten, you know, my wife's got a busy job, and, you know, I have managed to keep myself busy, even if I don't have a lot of work to do, just by being upset all the damn time. But we've been sort of trying to make time to cook dinner every night, and just that is a thing you can't do while looking at your phone.
Right.
and sort of focusing on trying to do something nice for each other, you know, that involves a little bit of forethought and a little bit of craft and, you know, time and attention. And I find that, you know, a lot of the feeling better is just getting out of the screen mediated experience and into something that involves, you know, being out in the world, using your hands, doing stuff, talking to people. Like, honestly, like just the difference between drinking a beer in a bar and drinking a beer on your couch feels like load bearing to me now. Mm-hmm. Like, as just like a thing that is keeping me hanging on by my fingernails. I mean, I wish I had answers though, you know, like with any of this stuff. I think it's just being around people, reminding yourself that people are what the world is made of, and not, you know, all of these other sort of like scarier, bigger, less human scale concerns. I'm sort of talking to myself here, but that's like, that's the thing I'm trying to do.
No, I'm going to leave here and go to a high school drama rehearsal with a bunch of high schoolers who are certainly concerned about the world. But at this point, am I going to learn my lines? Because we go up in a week.
Yep. Honestly, those are stakes that you can live with. It's a lot easier to get your head around that than to be like, what would it be like if you put Robert F. Kennedy in charge of Health and Human Services?
Yeah.
What play are you doing?
We're doing a musical, the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a big hit. I remember seeing posters for it.
Yeah, fun show.
That's cool. Well, good luck with it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good luck with cooking dinner and finding solace wherever you can, and keep fighting the fight. We'll see you out there on Blue Sky.
Right on. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, David.
Take care, guys.
It's David Roth of Defector, the Distraction Podcast, with us on Downtown.